Bomberman is going to talk about another big picture thing, even bigger picture, more of the, some theological questions on the techno-ethical approach to original sin, well, robot sin. So without further ado, 4 minutes late, go take it away, Tim.
Thanks. Hi, everyone. I have a bit of a lengthy introduction that I'm just going to feel free to cut. Asking big questions, barely scraping at answers, ultimately trying to figure out whether this is even a stupid question or not was a big part of my process. I'll let you know how it goes in the end. So I did my thesis research in my graduate school at Regent College on original sin and kind of combining that with a view of evolution of morality to kind of see how those things could work together. And then I decided to do something maybe foolish and apply it to a field I know nothing about. So welcome to me not painting in broad strokes, but finger painting my way through my understanding of artificial intelligence. It was helpful to find that the questions that I was thinking about, for the large part, were starting to be addressed by some. Some of the ethicists, some of the people who are assessing artificial moral agents. So, what we're going to look at today is informed a lot by a book by Wendell Wallach and Colin Allen called "Moral Machines: Teaching Robots Right from Wrong," and they kind of talk about how machines today are operating with low autonomy and low ethical sensitivity, and they're shifting away from language about artificial intelligence and moving it into the realm of autonomous moral agents. To narrow in what we're really talking about, AI is scary. Autonomous moral agents is a new term that most people don't understand. So we're going to spend some time talking about this. It's the idea that today's robots operate with low autonomy, low ethical sensitivity. Well, what that means is not even today's robots, but just the way that we design anything. You could think of the safety on a gun being zero autonomy, but a little bit of ethical sensitivity in the design process. That's not a machine in the same sense we're talking about in terms of artificial intelligence and robotics, but it's around that thinking that as soon as you're putting ethical sensitivity into your design process, that's when you're starting to move into that upper region. So the opposite of that would be something like an airplane autopilot. That's highly autonomous in the sense that it's adjusting a lot of different things on its own without pilot feedback, but it's not high on ethical sensitivity. You know, it doesn't care whether passenger Mark in 9B is feeling a little jittery about the bumps and the turbulence. That's not its concern. But obviously the overarching goal of an autopilot is pushing towards ethical sensitivity. But it's moving somewhere up there. So the idea is that it's functioning, an autopilot would be functioning in operational mobility, but not quite in terms of functional or moral, full moral agency. So the idea here that operational morality would be when the design process is undertaken with ethical values fully in view, like that's its goal in the programming, well, that's when it's going to be starting to move up there. And then functional morality is kind of that gray zone where we're starting to push into. And that's somewhere between, you know, nothing and full autonomy plus full ethical sensitivity. And maybe you're like me, maybe you're starting to get a little uncomfortable with the language. So perhaps it's wise to start doing some definitions. Most of the research I was looking at here focuses on kind of a pairing of behaviorist and functionalist perspectives towards the analogies that we're using. So it's something like intelligence being computation, and something like a functionalist approach being that these pieces in the machine are parts of a whole that can cause effect on its behavior. The same with its reductionistic, but it's a necessity. It has to be reductionistic because you're starting small and then building up, as opposed to just trying to figure out how it all works from the top down. Well, we'll get to top down later. And then I liked this approach by Wallach and Allen because it focused on what works. It focused on what people were doing now, as opposed to the futurist perspectives that most of the popular literature around AI is immediately jumping into the future. So then along those lines, again, broad strokes, finger painting, the autonomous moral agent can be kind of defined as autonomy is functioning without direct human input. I mean, I don't think I need to define moral at a bioethics conference, but it's operating within the moral or ethical sphere. You can take that what it means. And it has an element of agency, meaning that it's capable of action, or for computer science, more like information processing. So pressing ahead, the idea is that the practical task of building AMAs will contribute to better understanding of ontological and epistemological questions about the nature of ethics itself. So they're kind of not wanting to push hard ideas that are already vaguely understood. They're saying that it's maybe a better idea not to just arrest those questions, but to say that this ethical development into the system will be helping us define those terms as we move forward with the development of the technology. So getting into questions like, can a robot be a real moral agent? They're saying, well, if it's behaviorally indistinguishable from genuine moral agents, well, is that good enough? Well, for their answer, yeah, it's good enough. You might disagree with that. That's fine. I kind of do, but for a lot of different reasons. The idea is that it's like, if it's good enough for building up, then that's good enough for moving up that graph. So it's going to be the slow progression. More definitions, because I'm still a little confused about a lot of this. Flaherty and Sanders, in their book, or their article on the morality of artificial agents, talks about these three elements that need to be involved in these kind of AMAs. One being interactivity. So this is just basic response to stimulus by a change of state. That is, the agent and its environment can act on each other. The next being autonomy. We have these autonomous moral agents. So autonomy being the ability to change state without stimulus, that is, without direct response to interaction, which results in a certain degree of complexity and decoupledness from the environment. I can't remember what decoupledness really means, but you might be able to ask somebody else about that. The idea is that autonomy doesn't necessarily need to be a full idea of like human free will. That's not what we're talking about here. It's something that's much more reduced. And the next thing, adaptability. An AMA needs to be able to be responsive. So it's the ability to change the transition rules by which the state is changed. That is, the agent may be viewed as learning its own mode of operation in a way which depends critically on its experience. So those three definitions are kind of a hybrid between top-down and bottom-up models for how we instill ethics into an AMA. So the case study I'm looking at a little bit today is what's called MedEthics. It's a prototype medical ethics advisor that is an ethical decision support system developed by husband and wife team of computer scientists Michael Anderson and philosopher Susan Anderson. And it's a program that helps clinicians select ethically appropriate courses of action. So the idea, to boil it down, I'll quote at length. Suppose you're a doctor faced with a mentally competent patient who has refused a treatment you think represents her best hope of survival. Should you try to persuade her, a possible violation of the respect for the patient's autonomy? Or should you accept her decision, a possible violation of your duty to provide the most beneficent care? The MedEthics prototype prompts a caregiver to answer a series of questions about the case. Then, on the basis of a model of expert judgment learned from similar cases, it delivers an opinion about the ethically appropriate way to proceed. So this is something that has no autonomy, but it has a higher kind of functional morality that provides a platform for further development and response. So it's not, you know, the robot doctor, but it's informing the way that doctors today would be responding to patients. Whether you're going to spin that into the futurist part of like the robot providing better bedside manner, well, that's something else entirely. We're not there yet. This is still informing us. But this is part of that ethical sphere. What do we do when robots are informing our doctors' decisions? And what do we do if we start to value the robot's decision more than the doctor? Are you going to go see a different robot doctor? That kind of thing. Those questions are going to start to come up. So I'm going to take a little bit of time to speed up here and kind of, well, blow past the stuff that I love the most, which is relating this to the evolution of morality, because I'm going to be drawing on this a little bit later, but I'll give you the briefest of touchdowns. I'm looking at the evolution of morality within the assumption that evolution is true, but that it's compatible with Scripture, and that God can create fully moral beings capable of having the image of God through an evolutionary process. In the context of evolution, original sin becomes part of the slowly emerging process of human nature, so consciousness and conscience, within this complex system of morality. So I'm arguing that humans are inherently selfish beings, but that selfishness itself is morally neutral, and that natural selfishness is ultimately necessary for survival. We're self-determining creatures. There's an inherent need to, you know, take care of ourselves. It's only with the advent of human conscience within a system of morality that selfish behavior becomes sinful. Or to put it simply, we have to figure out what the meaning of right and wrong is before we could figure out what is right and wrong in the eyes of God. That would be my argument towards the evolution of morality. So it's also paired with the idea that sin is a relational term. It's about us relating to God. It's about us relating to each other. And sin is the fracturing of that relationship. So you might be able to see where I'm going with this. The idea is that conscience evolved with consciousness, and that biology and culture, nature through nurture, worked together to make us adaptively moral beings. But it's necessitated by the capability of relationship with God. So, shifting modes back to AMAs, what humans are doing now is trying to instill morality into machines. Well, the idea here is that anything that we're doing as fallen humans is going to be baked in to an artificial moral agent. So the best that we can do and the best that we can hope for is still going to be representative of a fallen world. So spoiler alert, will robots sin? Well, no, that's a ridiculous question. But it's going to be reflective of a sinful world. So the idea that I'm looking at here is that there's two ways that a lot of the ethicists and programmers are kind of working together. One would be these top-down systems, which would be moral principles ranging from religious ideals, moral codes, culturally endorsed values, and philosophical systems. So the examples of Golden Rule, Ten Commandments, utilitarianism, Kant's categorical imperatives, and Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics, all of those would be top-down systems that then an AMA would be trying to figure out how to implement those systems. Some of them work better than others. Some of them don't work at all. They're just too broad. We don't know how to define them very well. Some of them function more like logic-based systems. Categorical imperatives are a little bit better for that, but it's still tricky. So, in other words, the top-down approach takes an ethical theory, say utilitarianism, and analyzes the informational and procedural requirements necessary to implement the theory in a computer system, and applies that analysis to the design of subsystems and the way they relate to each other in order to implement that theory. So it's kind of capturing the essence of the moral judgment. So for that med ethics example, the top-down ideas would be familiar. Autonomy of the patient, beneficence, well, it's wanting to heal, and in non-malfeasance, it's not wanting to do harm. So then the opposite of that, well, maybe not the opposite, but something related, would be the bottom-up approaches. So the emphasis is placed on creating an environment where an agent explores courses of action and learns and is rewarded for behavior that is morally praiseworthy. So this is where evolution provides a bottom-up model for the adaptation, mutation, and selection of those agents best able to meet some criteria for fitness. So John Holland, in 1975, came up with genetic algorithms as a way to model adaptive programs. And his work has a wide variety of applications, and he suggested that computers might even become environments for evolving a new kind of life, what he called artificial life, a life. Take that definition for whatever it means. I don't really know how life can be defined artificially, but it's not what I'm talking about here. But this leads to designing robots to operate in physical environments or simulated environments in the field of evolutionary robotics. So this is robots getting genetic algorithms that are evaluated in real or virtual environments. And each robot is evaluated on its effectiveness in completing a desired task. And the robot's success is its fitness, and it determines whether its programming is recombined in a process that's based on sexual reproduction. And by introducing small random mutations, the new generation is then tested, and you repeat, and you repeat, and you repeat, and you get something that's akin to simulated evolution. So the guiding principle is that the foundational values of human society are rooted in humans' biological heritage. Then it might be reasonable to presume that these values would reemerge in a sufficiently rich simulation of natural selection. Another person studying this is Peter Danielson at the University of British Columbia, where I went to school, at the Center for Applied Ethics. He worked on constructing simulated environments where virtual organisms could change and adapt in response to the actions of other entities in the population. Danielson called these moral ecologies, and in the book Artificial Morality, Virtuous Robots for Virtual Games, he talked about how these mindless individual robots formed cooperative groups to compete for limited resources. And he proposed the concept of functional morality, in which rationality, as it is defined by game theory, is the only prerequisite for an agent to be a moral agent. So we don't need full agency or full moral agency for this to be working. We just need a functional morality. Then we're working towards something greater. So he argues that if human morality evolved, then sufficiently sophisticated artificial life experiments ought to be able to evolve other morally sensitive agents. So the values instantiated in evolved and evolving agents emerge from the pressures of adapting, surviving, and procreating in a multi-agent system. He does provide a big caveat towards the end of his research, to quote, he acknowledges that the rather simplistic games and artificial environments used for evolutionary simulations are not really reflective of the complex environments and multidimensional scenarios that gave rise to the values, laws, and mores of the real world. The real world is way too complex to properly simulate, but this is still a starting point. So, what we're looking at for the morality of AMAs is, well, it's kind of a hybrid model of top-down and bottom-up. most of the researchers now aren't doing one or the other. It's kind of both. So the practice, engineers and roboticists typically build their most complex systems using both top-down and bottom-up approaches. Components are assembled to fulfill specific functions guided by a theoretical top-down analysis that is typically incomplete. Commonly, there is more than one route to meet the project goals, and there is a dynamic interplay between analysis of the project's structure and the testing of the system designed to meet goals. So either way, the models are flawed, but they're working towards being functionally improved. As a last final quote, if replacing moral values at the systemic and cultural level, which we don't necessarily have to leave them there, then moral behavior need not relate exclusively to humans. The alternative view also suggests that man is not the only moral animal. Moral concepts surely emerge in all social beings, including, when they materialize, social machines. If behavior is simply the output that you get when countless genetic and environmental, including cultural influences, are processed by the brain, organic or machine, then traditional ideas of moral behavior, its causes and its remedies must be rethought. So we still have some problems. Will robots sin? Well, it might be a stupid question. I acknowledge it might be a stupid question. But the idea of a top-down approach would be, well, we can program them to behave in ways that we would not want. Well, that's a dumb thing to do. Why would we want to do that? So we can, or it will, sin against us if we let it. Or it will when it learns from us. That's probably the more futuristic approach. If it's ever in a place that's learning from us in an environment, well, I don't know. Well, ultimately, it's up to God. If they're talking about a digital soul, well, we're not the ones deciding that. I'm certainly not the one who's going to decide that. And that's all I have to say today. 'Autonomously attack, yeah.
Yeah,
that would be a huge problem or a huge concern for an artificial moral agent also being a soldier. So what do you do with something that's if we're instilling a machine to heal and to help humanity? Well, according to Asimov's three laws, which are also not really great. But if the idea is, if it's meant to protect humanity, well, what if we're building a machine that's meant to kill? Well, those are hugely contradictory ideas. So pushing the futurist argument is, well, what happens when your robot doctor meets a robot soldier on the battlefield? Would they ever be able to, come to some kind of agreement and literally change their code? Well, that's a projection in the future.
Two questions about, first of all, I love the paper or the presentation.
Thanks.
Two questions about sin, mm-hmm. and that would relate, I think, to what you're talking about. Sin is relational, but what about the sin that's completely individual? Is that relating with yourself? Is that how you pose it? And then secondly, in Paul's letters, sin is not only what we do, it's the structure of the old age which is passing away. Excuse me. So how that actually seems more amenable to your project, because in some ways these robots or AI or whatever, AMAs, become part of a system which is sinful.
Right.
They themselves do not choose it. Right. And they are implicated in these grand cosmic systems of sin. So both the individual side and the cosmic side. How does that, where do you go, come down on that, and how does it affect what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I like Paul's, I would think of, in terms of my own experience of Paul's lament of, why am I doing what I don't want to do? And that's this internal wrestling. Sin being that relational fracturing, you could talk about, me and God, me and you, and me and me. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of discord going on.
And me and the environment also, right?
Yes.
The world around us.
Yeah, I would say you could include you and the all of the everything else. Me and the not me.
Yeah.
So then, I'm not sure in terms of whether that's just a reflection of situating something that would be learning, especially if it's learning from us in a sinful environment. Well, if it's really bottom up and it's going to be learning all of our good behavior that we're wanting to be top down, but it's really going to be learning values from us, well, is it also going to be learning greed? Is it going to be learning
lying?
Sure. Is it going to be able to deceive? One of the case studies I read was that we're so prone to anthropomorphize machines, even in the sense that one of the case studies was you had to input data into a machine and it would turn off if the machine didn't upload that data fast enough. And one of the things it learned how to do was start beeping faster. It was programmed in to be able to do this, but it would beep faster if it was closer to that deadline. And then other models didn't beep faster. So then it was one of these suggestions that the response of the inputters were like, oh, I didn't want him to die. And it's like, well, what's it learning? Is that some kind of deception? Well, maybe. I don't know.
All right. Well, I think that's all the questions we have time for. Maybe you can catch Tim, after an important event's coming up, lunch, we can't ever...